Welcome to the Gerald Brooks Leadership Podcast, a deep dive into biblical leadership with pastor and author, Dr. Gerald Brooks.
Hi, this is Gerald Brooks. Thank you so much for joining me for another podcast. Just a minute, we're going to jump into a great, great lesson entitled Leading from the Frontline. Leading from the front line. But before we do, I want to take a moment and just ask you to put a couple of dates on your calendar. One is January 23rd in Plano, Texas. I will be hosting a roundtable. This roundtable is just a great opportunity to grow your leadership skills. I'm so excited about the material. We've refined it, we've improved it, and it's new material. I just think you're going to grow from it. And let me just inject here. One of the reasons that even in a day where you can listen to hundreds of podcasts, that you need to be in leadership rooms is that leadership is caught. It's just not taught. Yes, you can be taught leadership from a podcast, but you catch the spirit of leadership by being in the room. I just want to say to you that we'd love to have you here January 23rd and then on January 31st in Seattle. In the Seattle area, we'll be hosting a roundtable at a dear friend's church, and it is just a fabulous group of people who attend, and we would love for you to be a part of it. And then I'm so excited that on February 20th, I will be doing a roundtable with a friend that I admire so very, very much, and it's in the Nashville area. And I just want to encourage you, these three roundtables, 23rd, 31st, the 20th, Plano, Texas, Seattle, and then Nashville, they give you an opportunity to catch leadership. And what I can tell you, having done this for over 40 years, the most decisive moments that have ever happened in my leadership journey were not because I was taught leadership, but because I was in a room where I caught leadership. So you may think, oh, I'll just listen to the podcast. Podcasts can teach you, but you still need to be in a contagious atmosphere, and leaders are contagious. That being said, I want to talk to you about leading from the front lines, leading from the front lines. You know, I'm a very prolific reader. I've read literally thousands upon thousands of quote-unquote leadership books, leadership journals, listen to thousands, literally, I don't think that exaggerates in any way, leadership lessons from various areas. But I've begun to notice that there is a dichotomy. And the dichotomy is that there is now a stream of leadership being taught by people who no longer lead organizations. Now, I want you to understand what I'm saying. There are books out there that are based on leadership thought by someone who's not leading anything. Now, it's not that they don't have an organization, but basically their organization is them. Their job is to stand up and speak, and their job is to write, and their job is to sell books. And I can think about four or five guys out there right now that really are on the top echelon of leaders for conferences. And everyone says, oh, have you heard this person? Oh, have you heard this person? And honestly, when I hear their names, I cringe. And it's not because they're not gifted communicators, because they are. And it's not because they don't sell millions of books, because they do. It's that they don't have to lead in a real life setting. They get to teach leadership from the abstract and not from the concrete. And if your entire organization is made up of everyone just supporting you, that's not real leadership. So what I want to do is I want to talk to you about leading from the front lines. And I want to talk to you about leading when you're entrenched in an organization. Not that the organization is there to elevate you, but you're there to elevate it. I want you to get the difference. There are so many leaders out there that are making millions of dollars, but they have organizations that are designed to elevate them. It is different to be in charge of an organization where it's not to elevate you, you're to elevate it. Understand that distinction. So that being said, one of the things that I can tell you is that non-organizational leaders are leaders that do not have to lead an organization to make the organization better. They just have to make themselves better. There's some things that they don't have to do. See, when you're a non-organizational leader, number one, you're not caught up in the day-to-day. You're just not caught up in the day-to-day. See, if you're an organizational leader, what you know is that every day that you walk into your office, you walk into the building, you walk into the room, you know that every day something could have happened. You're caught up in the day-to-day. You don't know if this person has gone through a tragedy. You don't know if this event over here has reshaped the playing field. You don't know the day-to-day. Secondly, when you're a non-organizational leader, you're not involved in relational turmoil. You don't have to navigate through, well, Bill and Bob are really having a hard time. Or Susie, her mom's just been diagnosed with cancer. Now, you can be a non-organizational leader and you can interject yourself in those moments when you choose to. But if you're an organizational leader, you get in those moments whether you choose to or not. So I appreciate those leaders that are high and lofty, and they'll pick up the phone and they'll call and say, hey, I just heard you got the test back. But they're choosing to be involved. There are days when you're an organizational leader, you're walking into things you didn't choose. But that's what an organizational leader does. So the day-to-day is different. Relational turmoil can be avoided. Managing multiple deadlines. Just knowing that this group has a deadline here, if we're going to do this and to achieve this, this group has a deadline and to achieve this. And you know that if this deadline isn't met, or this deadline isn't met, or this deadline isn't met, then somehow things are going to fall apart. But when you're a non-organizational leader, you set the deadline. Now, you may have a publisher saying, hey, I need so many words by this time. I need the book done and this kind of completion at this. But hey, let's just be honest. You're still setting the deadline because they can't do it without you. But the day-to-day, the relational turmoil, managing multiple deadlines, the uncertainty of change. The uncertainty of walking into an office and Bill, who you've been counting on to really take you to the finish line on a project, comes in and he says, I've really been thinking through some things. I've just got to let you know that I'm going to be going over and I'm going to be working at a different company. And all of a sudden you're thinking, man, we wouldn't have chosen to run hard and to run fast towards the finish line in this area if you hadn't have told us that you're there. But the uncertainty of change, evolving chemistry of the team. Here's what I can tell you about team chemistry. Nobody teaches team chemistry based on relational change being the constant. Now, I admire people who write books on teamwork, but every book that I've ever read on teamwork is basically about the team staying the same. But you and I both know that the team is always changing, which changes the chemistry of the team. The new person coming in is different than the old person going out. The person who used to be there for years felt a certain way and had certain nuances. The team would build around that. They get it. And then you're sitting there and the non-organizational leader gets to avoid the day-to-day, the relational turmoil, the managing multiple deadlines, the uncertainty of change, the evolving of chemistry of the team. Now, if you're the person who doesn't get to avoid any of those things, this lesson's for you. Now, please understand, I have some very dear friends that basically the leadership structure is this. I speak and I write. And as long as I speak and I write, the organization's good. But the organization is about the organization making them better. It's not about them making the organization better. But see, in my capacity, that's not where I live. I have an organization. So let me walk you through seven skills of organizational leadership. Seven skills of organizational leadership. Now, these skills are not new. In fact, these skills have probably been run over so many different times that the ruts have now buried it. But they are the organizational skills. These are the skill sets that if you are going to be the organizational leader, you have to master, you have to nuance, you have to have the deep dive where you can begin to massage these and look at these. So let me talk to you about seven skills. Number one is vision. If you're going to be an organizational leader, you have to be able to handle vision. Now, that vision can come in two ways. It can be the vision that you're casting or the vision that you're enhancing. But if you're going to be an organizational leader, you deal with vision because vision tells you where you're going. See, vision means you know where you're going. I like to illustrate it this way. If you went to the DFW airport, you got through TSA, which is its own fun and thrill nowadays, and you got through that, and you went into the terminal, there may be 30 gates there. One of the gates says Miami. One of the gates says Chicago. One of the gates says LA. One of the gates says Orlando. And you could go down the list. Here's the thing. You don't go to the gate of a place that you don't want to go to. So you don't go to the Chicago gate if you want to go to the Miami gate. And what I'm saying to you is just being in the terminal is not enough. You have to know where you're going. And that's what vision is. Vision is knowing where you're going. This is where we're going. We're at X. We want to go here. And from X, we're going to move here. This is where we're going. And if you are going to be an organizational leader, you are either articulating where the organization is going or you're enhancing where the organization is going. Years ago, when I used to be the person who hired, I used to ask people this question. Will you put in writing what you believe the vision of our church is? So this person we're hiring had to write down, what is the vision of the church? Well, that's easy. You can look that up online. It's easy read. It's easy to get. But then I would ask a follow-up question. How does your job enhance the fulfilling of that vision? That's a little bit more challenging. So if I'm going to work at the church, I'm either articulating the vision or I'm enhancing the vision, but that's just not at a church. That's at any business. And so if you're going to be an organizational leader, you have to have vision. You have to know where you're going. Secondly, you have to have values. You have to know why you're doing what you're doing. And what I can tell you is that every organization has a value content. That value content can be a thousand things, but every organization has a value base. It's not only what are you doing, but why are you doing? So if you get beyond where you're going, the question becomes, why are you going there? Now, the thing about organizational leaders is you have to be able to understand not only where you're going, but you have to understand why you're going. And those values have to be in. So the classic example in business would be Johnson & Johnson during the Tylenol scare. And it was literally one of those moments where they pulled all their product. They lost literally, I think, nearly $1 billion, which back then was a whole lot of money, even though they had a limited scope of a problem. And the problem was severe and it was horrible because it involved deaths. But to create confidence, they pulled all their product everywhere off. So they're making $1 billion decisions. And it was all based on, we will do what's best for our customer. Now, everyone says that. Not everyone does that. So you've got to figure out your value. What is the vision of where you're going? Values, why are you going there? and what's going to guide you there? Because you can get there by cutting corners. You can get there by sort of skimming the edge. You can get there by doing something that would make it faster, but it doesn't make it better. And you can do something in a way that it looks good, but it's not right. Values. Number three, velocity. How fast are you going? Probably from an organizational leadership standpoint, this was the hardest component for me to learn. See, once I know where we're going and I know why we're going, I want to get going. I just want to get going. And see, this is one of the things about non-organizational leaders. They don't want to wait on the organization because the organization's to enhance them. They're not to enhance the organization. So with that being said, here's the thing. How fast can you go? Now, when I say that to you, it's important. I can get places faster than other people on my team. I have team members that can get there faster than still others in our team. And what I've learned is you can never let the extremes determine the velocity. So I can't let the fastest person, which is me, determine the velocity, nor can I let the slowest person determine the velocity. I have to find a pace that works for the whole of our organization. So we may not get it done as quick as I want to, and we may not be able to resolve it as slow as some people want me to. But I've got to figure out if I'm going to lead that organization, what is the velocity? What is the speed that we're going to run up to? So vision, where are you going? Values, why are you going there? Velocity, how fast can you go? Volume, how much should you do? The volume thing is very, very important because more gets thrown at us today than has ever been thrown at us. And one of the things that leaders have to determine is not what should we do, but what should we not do. And the reason that organizations many times implode is that they become guilty of trying to do too many good things, that they forgot what was the best thing they should do. So vision, where are you going? Values, why are you going? Velocity, how fast are you going? In volume, how much are you going to do as you go? See, here's the thing. Everybody has to determine how much. Some organizations can handle a whole lot. Other organizations can handle a very slim amount. But you get to determine when is the volume going to take you away from vision, values, and velocity. See, if your volume kills your vision, then your volume's too much. If your volume compromises your values, then your volume's too much. If your volume means you can't move ahead with any kind of momentum, velocity, then you're doing too much. Most organizations do not fail because they're not doing something. They fail because they're trying to do too many things. The next one is the vehicle. So if you've got the vision, you know where you're going, values, why you're going, velocity, how fast you're going, volume, how much you're going to do while you're going, then vehicle, how are you going to go? See, there's a difference between taking a car, taking a bus, taking a plane, and taking a boat. Now, all of those are legitimate vehicles, but the vehicle you choose determines how you're going to go about doing things. And so there may be five ways to do the exact same thing you're doing, and all five of those ways may be legit, but you have to determine which of those five ways is the way that you need to do something. So the vehicle. How are you going to get where you want to go? What is the vehicle? What is the system? What is the mechanism that you've set up to go from A to B to achieve the vision, the values, the velocity, the volume? How do you get there? What does that look like? What does that feel like? What are you doing? Now, that leads you to the sixth skill, and that is the vitals, short for vital signs. Do you know what to measure? When you walk into an emergency room, they're going to do some quick measurements. One, they are going to measure your blood pressure. That gives them a glimpse on the inside. They are going to measure your temperature. That's going to give them a glimpse. They are going to measure your motor skills. That's going to give you a glimpse. They're going to listen to your heart. What do they know? They know that there's information that they need to measure, because what you measure determines the direction of where you need to spend your time. So if someone has an extreme temperature, they may be in a situation that gives us a direction. We got to control this temperature, or we've got to figure out what is the infection from. Well, if the heartbeat is erratic, well, it may not be the temperature you're chasing. You've got to be able to say, how do we somehow handle this heartbeat? Well, in leadership, you have to know the vital signs. Now, this is one of those things that I have an advantage because I've led an organization for 37 years. It is instinctive for me to know what this organization feels like. The way someone can listen to a car and say, well, the engine's doing this or not doing this, I can do that with my organization. And so what is instinctive to me after decades may have to be more reactive to others, where they're constantly measuring. They're constantly measuring things. So if you're going to lead an organization, there's vision. Where are you going? Values, velocity, volume, vehicle, and vital signs. And then there's vulnerability. Do you know what your weaknesses are? Do you know what the Achilles heel is? Do you know what the tipping point is that can take you from the positive to the negative, that can cause you to be an organization that is facing headwinds at such a rate that you're not going to be able to make it? So look at these skills: vision, values, velocity, volume, vehicle, vital signs, and vulnerability. Now, if you're an organizational leader, you're going to have to manage those day to day. You're going to have to manage those within the relationship turmoil. You're going to have to manage those within the uncertainty of change. So all those things we started with, you're going to have to be able to run this cycle of skills through this. But let me give you what I call the realities of the front line. Just some realities that I think that if you understand that you're an organizational leader and not a non-organizational leader who just gets to write books, that you never have to live out. And please understand, I'm not being critical of the people who write those books. I just wish there was transparency when we say, hey, I'm telling you how to run an organization when I'm not doing it myself. Because I think many times the theory of leadership distracts people from the practices of leadership. And I'm a practitioner. So that being said, let me give you some realities of the front line. Number one, organizational leaders must juggle and balance. So on any given day, I've got to balance things. I've got to balance the vision. New people coming in that don't get it. Old people who've heard it so many times. I've got to balance the velocity. Well, this key person's going to be out for this period of time. What do I do? And I've got to, organizational leaders have to juggle and balance. And if you don't have the ability to juggle and balance, you will not be an organizational leader. Number two, you have to create value for people while promoting outcomes. So I'm dealing with people that I need to achieve a certain goal, and I need to create value for them. Why are you important to this? Why do you make a difference in this? Why are you key? But at the same time I'm creating value, I have to promote outcomes. And I say, this is where we've got to go. So I have to look at the promotion on one end, and then I have to turn around and I have to be able to say, hey, you're valuable, but I need these outcomes. Number three, creating timetables that are realistic. I've got to be able to perform on a timeline. And I've said for years, whoever controls the timeline is the leader. So creating timetables that are realistic. Number four, learning to audible. I remember I had this kid who grew up in our youth group. In fact, there was a year in our youth group that we had the number one rated high school player and football, according to ESPN, going into college. We also had the number one rated basketball player going into college. I'm telling people, you know, if you want to take on our youth group, challenge them in Bible, we may lose. But when it comes to sports, we're usually going to knock you out of the thing because we've got talent back there. Just sort of a sarcastic note there. So just roll with it. That being said, I had a kid who grew up. He went to the University of Alabama and played football, so it's high-level football. He then went from Alabama and he played for the Green Bay Packers. I asked him, I said, what is the difference between being at Alabama, which is high-rated school, and being with the Green Bay Packers? With the Packers, he won a Super Bowl. And he looked at me and he said this. He said, the difference is from the time that we line up for the play, in college, you may change the play two times. And the pros, you may change it three or four times. So he says, within a span of about 10 seconds, the whole dynamic of the offense and defense may change four times. And you've got to be able to audible and adjust if you're on offense, if you're on defense. And I thought, man, that is function right there, the ability to audible. Number five, creativity must occur within context. Creativity must occur within context. So a lot of people want to be creative. Hey, man, let's just act like we have a blank sheet of paper. And that's great. But no one has a blank sheet of paper. You have a team that exists. You have money that's available. And you've got to understand that every sheet of paper has some degree of margin to it, or you're not writing on the paper. But creativity, let's just pretend, let's just think out of the box. Here's the thing. Creativity for McDonald's is different than creativity for Apple. Why? Their context is different. McDonald's isn't trying to produce a five-star dining experience. They are trying to create fast food and a fast way for someone who wants to move fast. So McDonald's creativity is different than Apple, where Apple was basically the idea, you don't even know what you want yet. We're going to create what you want. So there's a context there. And then number six, staying focused but flexible. So how do you lead where you're focused? We got to go there, but you're flexible. We've got to do this while we go there. And seven, being able to couple two unique skills of training the new and still setting requirements for everyone. How do you create that environment? Hey, thank you so much for joining me. I just had on my heart to talk to some of the organizational leaders, people that are truly on the front line. Thank you so much for joining me today. Again, if you can go to GeraldBrooksMinistries.com, you will find a whole list of upcoming events. I'd love to have you at some because I know leadership can be taught, but leadership has to be caught. When you're in a room with high-level leaders, you feel it. And for some of you, it's not the lesson you need, it's the life of a leader you need. Come and join us and make a point to be available to those moments. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to the Gerald Brooks Leadership Podcast. If you'd like more information on Dr. Brooks's books, audio, or speaking engagements, please go to GeraldBrooksMinistries.com.